Welcome to the Living a Naturally Healthy Life podcast with Delaine the MD, the podcast for people looking to correct chronic illnesses such as diabetes through lifestyle change. I'm Dr. Delaine Vaughn. As a physician, I see many patients who are ill because of lifestyle decisions such as food choices. Typically, diseases such as diabetes are managed with pills or injections. This approach creates a vicious, expensive, and unhealthy cycle of medication and then more medication to address the negative side effects. As a physician and a life coach, I work with clients to resolve their diseases, get off their medications, and live a naturally healthy life. If you don't like the healthcare system in America, I recommend you use less of it by being naturally healthy. So if you feel there has to be a better, more natural way to live a healthy life, you are in the right place. Hello, and welcome to the Reversing Diabetes with Delaine, MD podcast. I am your host, Dr. Delaine Vaughn. This is episode number 111. I cannot believe it. That seems like so many, but here we are. So this podcast is dedicated to offering strategies to living a naturally healthy life. That's what I'm really passionate about. If that's what you're wanting to hear about, you are totally in the right place. Today, we are going to talk about polycystic ovarian syndrome and hyperinsulinemia. So this is what I really help my clients do. I do help my clients reverse diabetes. And yes, that is what this podcast is named. If that's what you're needing, you're going to get some good information here. The strategies that I use to help my clients reverse their type 2 diabetes involve reducing insulin in their system. That is really the root cause of type 2 diabetes. In addition to being the root cause of type 2 diabetes, it is also the root cause of many other diseases in the human body, including polycystic ovarian disease, which is what we're talking about today. And what we will be talking about next week is non-alcoholic fatty liver disease and the role that hyperinsulinemia plays in non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So tune in for that. Recognize there are many, many episodes where I discuss why hyperinsulinemia is the cause of type 2 diabetes. So go back and check out those old episodes. I feel like I come back to that probably once every 8 or 10 episodes. I come back to that because it really is truly the root cause of diabetes. And again, not just diabetes, all of these other diseases. So let's dig into that today. We are going to discuss polycystic ovarian disease or polycystic ovarian syndrome. It's really technically a syndrome. It is not a disease. I did a ton of research for this podcast in the last week, not because I'm a board certified medical physician, so I understand what polycystic ovarian syndrome is, but the part that I kept researching was I would listen to an expert talk about it in a podcast, or I would look into the medical texts, the textbooks that I used when I was in medical school or their updated versions. I would turn to the medical literature and what was in research articles, and we kept coming back to the same thing that I found really frustrating, the idea that we don't know why this happens and we aren't really sure what to do. So I listened to podcasts that had gynecologists that were specialists in polycystic ovarian syndrome, naturopaths. So, you know, many of you are aware if you've listened to the podcast, my philosophy on medicine is not that that human beings are across the board broken, but my philosophy on medicine and health is that human beings are across the board perfect, and that we as human beings live our lifestyles in a way that doesn't really align with natural laws, and that creates a lot of illness. And I do still believe that. So I do reach out to naturopaths, functional medicine doctors, integrative medicine specialists. I feel like they have a lot of valuable information because they also feel like the human beings really were all, for the most part, the majority of us are genetically normal. We do these things that cause diseases in our lives from our lives, the way we live our lives. So I had listened to podcasts that had PhDs in them, on them. They were interviewing them and they were asking them questions about polycystic ovarian syndrome. And across the board, across all of these kind of philosophies and approaches to medicine and science, it was the same thing. We don't know why this happens and we aren't really sure what to do. It made me crazy because I just don't see polycystic ovarian disease this way or syndrome this way. And when I help my clients normalize their insulin, I do see them have improved periods, improved cycles, improved rates of pregnancy. All of those things happen when we normalize this insulin level. So I looked at things from in the 1990s, like old medical research articles from the 1990s to the current information, and they all pointed to the same idea of, we don't know. We don't know what's going on. So this is totally fine, because let's be honest, maybe I don't know all the answers either. Maybe I don't have all of the answers. But the repeating themes that I did come across in the literature totally supported why I believe implementation of lifestyle modifications is really the first line of action against polycystic ovarian syndrome. So let's talk about this. The epidemiology of polycystic ovarian syndrome. So what do I mean by that? How frequently does it happen is really what I want to talk about here. I came across statistics that kind of the most agreed upon statistic is somewhere between 6 and 12% of American women, of U.S. women, have polycystic ovarian syndrome. I did see a statistic as high as 26% of American women have polycystic ovarian syndrome. So as a reference point, 10% of the American population is left-handed. So about as many people who are, as many women as you know that are left-handed will have polycystic ovarian syndrome. So just to kind of get a reference point, other reference points I want to give you, about 0.14% of live births each year are affected by Down syndrome. About 0.1% of the population has cystic fibrosis. About 1% of the U.S. population will get a cancer called acute myeloid leukemia that is associated with genetic abnormality. I bring up these specific statistics as a reference point so that you can get an idea how many people do you know with one of these genetically modulated. So the genes are a primary driver in Down syndrome, cystic fibrosis, and AML. How many people do you know with those diseases compared to how many people that have this polycystic ovarian syndrome, or how many people you know that are left-handed? These statistics are important because, again, these diseases, Down syndrome, cystic fibrosis, and AML, have a very strong genetic correlation. In fact, we know the specific genes associated with all of these diseases. For diseases that are truly and solely related to genes, biology is such that it makes these conditions exceedingly rare. Biology, science, God, if you will, I mean, like, I believe that that's my personal belief set, is that biology, science, or God has made these truly genetically regulated diseases very rare. And seeing that polycystic ovarian syndrome has an occurrence rate that is 10 times higher than acute myeloid leukemia and about 100 times more frequent than Down syndrome or cystic fibrosis lets you know that this is not typical of a genetically related disease. For women with polycystic ovarian syndrome, this is awesome news because it is not your genetic fate to be sick with this disease for the rest of your life, okay? So seeing that epidemiology, I think, is really interesting. The definition of polycystic ovarian syndrome as a diagnosis, when we as medical providers go to give this as a diagnosis, you're going to have you need to have two of three criteria. You're going to have hair growth that is abnormal. So women have a specific hair growth pattern. Men have a specific hair growth pattern. If you look at the specifics of those, like if you get really nitty gritty with it, they're different. It's part of our differences as females and males as human beings. So you will have a abnormal female hair growth pattern that looks more like it's converting over to a male hair growth pattern. We call this hirsutism in the medical literature. You will also have anovulation. So you will not release an egg during your menstrual cycle. That is what anovulation is. You will also possibly have polycystic ovaries. So when we look at your ovaries on ultrasound, there will be a bunch of cysts. The statistic I heard, or the criteria I heard, I think, was 10 to 14 cysts on either the right or the left on one of your ovaries. You have to meet that threshold to be considered polycystic ovaries. So those are the diagnostic criteria. Again, hair growth, you're not ovulating when you're having a period, and then you have polycystic ovaries on ultrasound. You need to have two of those three criteria to get the diagnosis of polycystic ovarian syndrome. Other findings that you will see, you're going to have increased androgens. So what are androgens? They're testosterone and androstenedione. So these are the androgens that we're typically talking about. When we say androgens, those are going to be male sex hormones, okay? Women make estrogens and progestins are the groups, and, you know, estrogen, estradiol, those are the big common estrogens, and then progesterone is the common progestin that we talk about with female hormones. androgens being male hormones cause male effects on our bodies, right? So these androgens are what lead to the abnormal hair growth. What we also see is abnormal gonadotropin release from the brain, from the pituitary gland. Primarily, these are two hormones, LH and FSH. So LH is luteinizing hormone. FSH is follicle stimulating hormone. And these impact the ovaries in a way that causes them to actually make more of the male hormones. Recognizing when we talk about male hormones and female hormones, it's not like androgens, you know, the testosterone and the androstenedione. When we're talking about those hormones, they're not only made in men. Women make an amount of them too. It's just a much less amount, like 10 times less than the male makes, right? Same thing for men. Do men have estrogen in their system? Sure, they have estrogen in their system. They just make so much less of it than women do. That's why we don't see the sexual effects, the body effects that we see in women with estrogen in men, because they make so much less. Same thing for women. Typically, women will have testosterone in their system, but it's so much less that we don't see that impact of male development that we would if there was more of it. So what happens is when we get this increase of the androgens in the female body, we start to see these effects, right? So, like I said, increased androgens, you get the hirsutism or the abnormal hair growth. But in addition, we have this effect on our LH and our FSH that causes the ovaries to make more androgen, because that's where we're getting the androgen in the normal situation. You know, in the normal functioning female ovary, our ovaries are making androgens. We just make them in such a small amount. When we have this abnormal LH and FSH, it impacts the ovaries in a way that we're producing substantially more androgens. In addition to having too much androgen or these abnormal hormones going around in our system, women with polycystic ovarian syndrome also are known to be associated with being substantially insulin resistant. And you know that this is my thing. This is my wheelhouse. This is what I help my clients do. I help all my clients reverse their insulin resistance. But recognize in the condition of polycystic ovarian syndrome, insulin does a few things that are reported out in the medical literature. First, it stimulates a receptor. So insulin binds to a receptor on the theca, T-H-E-C-A, cells in the ovaries. That receptor typically binds with a hormone called insulin-like growth factor 1. And the insulin-like growth factor 1 binds that insulin-like growth factor 1 receptor and turns it on. So when it gets turned on, it causes the theca cells to make more sex steroids. So more estrogen, but in addition to the estrogen, more of the androgens also, so the testosterone and the male hormones. When we have too much insulin in our system, or when there's insulin also floating around, insulin also binds to the insulin-like growth factor 1 receptor and turns it on to make more hormones. Not just estrogen, but also androgens. When you recognize that there are two effective androgens that we're talking about and only one real effective estrogen that we're talking about, we're getting two times the amount of androgen effect or male hormone effect in our body than we are female hormone effect. So when there's too much insulin in our system, your ovaries are constantly getting bound to the insulin, turning on this IGF-1 receptor, causing your ovaries to make a bunch more androgens in the system. So you have more testosterone, more of those male hormones floating around in your system. Again, this is leading to things like hair growth and also impacting these ovulation issues. In addition, insulin also impacts our livers. And again, we're going to talk about that next week, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. But what is happening that impacts our sex hormones is that the liver makes a very important protein called the sex hormone binding protein. Sex hormones, that's going to be your estrogens, your androgens, binding globulin. So it's SHBG, sex hormone binding globulin. Globulin is just another word for protein. These proteins bind up our sex hormones and they inactivate them. And they allow our bodies to then circulate an inactive form of these sex hormones, transporting the hormones around our bodies to the cells that actually need them. And then they unbind from that protein and the hormone is delivered to the cell that needs them and it does its job appropriately. Sex hormone binding globulin binds testosterone, that androstenedione, and the estrogen, right? When we don't have when there's a decreased amount of the sex hormone binding globulin that causes us to have more active androgens, so the testosterone and the androstenedione in our system. So that leads to an increased effect of the androgens in our bodies, right? Those are the androgen hormones. Those are the male hormones. And it leads to an increased amount in our body. Insulin impacts our liver by decreasing the amount of sex binding or sex hormone binding globulin that the liver produces. That means that we have all of this active sex hormone floating around our system, wreaking havoc on our system. So these hormone abnormalities cause all sorts of problems throughout our body and lead to a lot of the effect that we see in polycystic ovarian syndrome. In addition to that component of the abnormal hormones, we also have unopposed estrogen, which means we just don't have the progesterone, the 2 weeks of progesterone effect that we see in a normal menstrual cycle. So that's one of the issues. And then there's all these androgens, all these male hormones floating around in our system. That's the part that we see causing the abnormalities that polycystic ovarian syndrome women experience. So that's why I discussed that. I'm more interested in pointing out the solution to polycystic ovarian syndrome than I am into digging into the things like the estrogen and the progesterone ratios. Although a lot of docs, when you go to talk to them, they will totally want to talk about this. And I just feel like it's another conversation and I don't think it's part of the solution. And that's why I'm not digging into it right now. So the outcomes associated with polycystic ovarian syndrome are very interesting. One of the main outcomes that we see in polycystic ovarian syndrome is weight gain. For me and what I do with helping people normalize their insulin, this is a no-brainer. We know that insulin leads to weight gain. We know that you cannot have weight gain without too much insulin in your system. So that's a no-brainer for me. But what I do want to point out is that we have increased testosterone in our system, right? Like women with polycystic ovarian syndrome will have a ton of testosterone in their system due to all of these, you know, biochemical reactions that I've already discussed. Testosterone increases the metabolism. Everybody wants to believe that we need to increase our metabolism to lose weight. And if this is the case, the super elevated level of testosterone in our system should make the polycystic ovarian syndrome patient thin. This is not the case. This is just another reason why letting go of the connection between metabolism and weight loss needs to happen, because clearly that's not what we see physiologically in the human being, not just the polycystic ovarian syndrome patient. But I'm telling you that you cannot, I say this all the time, you cannot run the fork. There's no increase in your metabolism that undoes a bad diet. And it's because there is no connection. The metabolism is not what creates weight loss. You actually have to start eating in a way that is biologically aligned for the human being. And that's what I teach my clients to do. So in addition to the weight gain that we see in polycystic ovarian syndrome patients, we also see anovulation, which means you're just not releasing an egg with your typical monthly cycle. So this leads to one, irregular periods, which is a total pain in the tail, right? Like nobody loves that part. In addition, and more importantly, it also leads to infertility. When you're not making an egg, you can't make a baby. So we see a lot of infertility with polycystic ovarian syndrome patients. There are also associated risks of cancer with polycystic ovarian syndrome, and that's associated or due to that unopposed estrogen and progesterone, that estrogen-progesterone ratio being off. And doctors talk about that a lot, and that's also a lot of reason that doctors want to give birth control pills to correct this, because they want to give you the progesterone so that you don't have the effects of unopposed estrogen, which leads to a cancer risk. That seems all great and well, but you can just fix this by fixing your diet. You can fix this by fixing your insulin. So that is what I teach my people to do, right? Like the fix to polycystic ovarian syndrome is to decrease your insulin. That is the place to start. They will talk about how there are multiple causes, like there are many different reasons that people can have polycystic ovarian syndrome, and that is true. But the overwhelming majority, like 80% of people with polycystic ovarian syndrome, will have too much insulin in their system. They have this hyperinsulinemia and this insulin resistance going on. Fixing that with lifestyle modifications so that you are behaving biologically in alignment with nature is the first step. So decrease the insulin. What causes insulin to be produced in your body? The food that you eat is the cause of insulin being produced in your body. Change the food and you get that insulin decreased. This normalizes your liver's production of that sex hormone binding globulin, normalizing your body's ability to inactivate all of those sex hormones, those androgens floating around your system. In addition, your ovaries will no longer be receiving the overstimulation of that insulin-like growth factor receptor, creating more of the testosterone from your ovaries. There are so many downstream effects and positive and negative feedback loop mechanisms that lead to a self-propagating effect of the overproduction of the testosterone and the anovulation and the polycystic ovarian component, the, you know, overproduction of cysts in the ovary component of this disease. So I don't want to say that they're not important. There's 100 different other effects, and they are important. But what I do want to offer you is normalizing your insulin has such an amazing impact on polycystic ovarian syndrome that there is no reason to not start there. So that is what I want to offer you today. Polycystic ovarian syndrome can definitely be improved and positively impacted by fixing that diet. And that's what I help my clients do. So polycystic ovarian syndrome is one of the diagnoses. I call it a diabetes spectrum. And many of these women will go on to develop type 2 diabetes. I call it a diabetes spectrum, though. This diabetes spectrum includes a lot of different diseases that are all related to too much insulin in your system, because all of the strategies that I teach my clients are to normalize their insulin levels so their human bodies start behaving normally. If that's something you're interested in, send me a message, Delaine@DelaineMD, set up a time to do a consult with me, and we'll talk about how my program will help you normalize your specific conditions, and we'll get you started on living that naturally healthy life. If you have any questions about this, if anybody's told you anything different and you're finding the information that I've presented confusing to what you've been told before, do not hesitate to reach out to me. I am happy to either answer the question if I can, or research and find out the information that to enhance my knowledge base so that I can give you and help clarify the confusion for you. If that's something you need, send me a message, Delaine@DelaineMD.com. I will talk with you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and share with your friends and family. Also, leave me a review. If you want to resolve your diabetes naturally without any pills or injections, I can help you. Visit DelaineMD.com for more information. Click on the Work With Me tab, send me a message, and we can set up a mini coaching session. You guys have a great week. I'll talk to you soon.